This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Here's Amelia with her question from Science Spectacular.
How far away is Earth from the Sun?
Wow, what a great question. Well, I can answer that in numerical terms. The Sun is at an average distance of 150 million kilometers away. And I'm aware that in this country you guys use funny units, so that's about 93 million miles away. Now, because these distances are so far, astronomers have actually decided to give this distance a name. And so this distance or unit is known as one astronomical unit. So whenever somebody talks about one astronomical unit, that's the distance from the Sun to the Earth. But as you noticed earlier, I said this is the average distance because the orbit of Earth around the Sun isn't actually a perfect circle. It's more elliptical, like an oval. So the actual distance varies between about 147 million kilometers to 152 kilometers away. So this is a really big distance, 150 million kilometers, and it's actually so far away that it takes light itself more than 8 minutes to travel from the Sun to Earth, right? And that's just from the Sun to Earth. The universe is so large that astronomers have actually got another distance measure that they call a light year. It is the distance that light travels in a year, and this is about 9 million kilometers. I've called this 9 million because I'm aware that in the UK, this would be 9 billion, whereas in the US, it'd be 9,000 billion. So for the purposes of this, I'm going to refer to one with 9 zeros after it as a billion and one with 12 zeros after it as a trillion. Okay, so the universe is really, really big, right? So we've just said it takes 8 minutes for light from the Sun to reach the Earth, right? And that's just our Sun, our star in our solar system. The closest star to us, to the Sun, is 4 light years away. And that's just our closest star. There are 100 billion stars in our Milky Way. And it takes light about 100,000 years to travel from one side of our galaxy, our Milky Way, to the other. And that's just our galaxy. And there are over 100 billion galaxies in the universe. So you can see that in astronomical terms, well, you can see that the universe is very, very big, and the distance between the Sun and the Earth, in astronomical terms, is actually very, very small.
So our second question comes from Natalie Shaw, and here is Natalie asking her question.
Is there life on Mars?
Thanks for that, Natalie. So, is there life on Mars? It's an interesting question, is it, whether or not life could flourish so close to home. Mars is roughly half the mass of the Earth. Its day is of comparable length to ours at 24 and a half hours, and it experiences seasons like we do as it's tilted with respect to the ecliptic. And so at face value, it's a very Earth-like place. And early observations of Mars, those being that it had some topography or other that looked vaguely Earth-like, brighter and darker patches that were possibly water and land, led to the speculation that Mars might be rich in life, and indeed the word Martian became somewhat synonymous with the word alien. But to date, none has been found, and there certainly doesn't appear to be any intelligent life there. If there is, they're certainly not building large structures and haven't crossed the paths of any rovers that we've sent there. But the question leads to some further questions which are interesting to explore, not just to do with life on Mars, but to do with life in general. One problem comes from the fact that planets are not isolated systems. Planets get hit from time to time by comets and asteroids, and when they hit, they send a lot of the victim planet's material into interplanetary space. Much of that ejecta can make its way to other planets, and with Mars being so close, it's inevitable that some material from the Earth has arrived at Mars after large impacts on the Earth. And that's true in reverse, of course, there's traffic in both directions. So it's very possible, on a planet that's as rich as the Earth is in life, that some bacteria or unicellular organisms could hitch a ride on that ejecta and make their way into space and to other planets, including Mars. We know of a number of species of bacteria that can resist extreme drops in temperature, survive at very high temperatures, are resistant to being in a vacuum for extended periods, and are not bothered at all by radioactivity, and so it's possible that in the past, we've sent samples of life to Mars just by being hit. And if Mars was rich in simple forms of life in the past, it's of course possible that Martian life came to us after it got hit. So there's this natural process of cross-contamination within which planets can not only swap geological material, but biological material as well. One of the things we've known since Darwin's time is that all of life on Earth can be traced back to a single common ancestor, a single tree of life, if you like. If we found life on Mars today, we'd have to be very careful about how we define it, as it may not have originated from a different biochemical scheme, and instead, in fact, may belong to the single tree of life we apparently have on Earth. The flip side of this is that life as we know it may not have come from Earth. There are some models of the early Mars that suggest that it was a better place for life to get started in the first place. And if life flourished there, early in the solar system's history, it would have made its way to Earth very quickly, and as Mars became less habitable, and Earth became more habitable, that Martian life flourished here and became the biosphere we see on Earth today. An interesting consequence emerges if we find life on Mars and measure that it emerged independently of life on Earth or vice versa and belongs to a separate biochemical scheme than any life we know of on Earth. One thing we don't know is how readily life emerges given Earth-like conditions. It's possible that given any old Earth-like planet, that life on that planet is inevitable. This has been called the cosmic imperative, and we can't say whether life is or isn't a cosmic imperative given Earth-like conditions, as we have no working model for how life emerges in the first place. And so we can't say whether its emergence on Earth, if that's where it started, is typical, as we only have a sample size of one. Now, Mars is vaguely Earth-like today and was much more so in the past, so if we can demonstrate that Genesis occurred independently on Mars, it lends weight to this idea that life is a cosmic imperative given Earth-like conditions, and has immediate implications for our estimates of how prevalent life is in the rest of the universe. Even more interestingly, at least to me, is the idea that if life is inevitable on Earth-like planets, is there any reason that on the Earth, life didn't get started more than once? That is, there is a separate tree of life, coexisting with the life we know on Earth today. As far as identifying new species is concerned, especially those of bacterial form, we've barely scratched the surface of our own biosphere, let alone a separate one on a neighbouring planet. And so there's the potential that as we probe deeper into ocean vents, for example, or other areas where life isn't well sampled, that we may happen across a species that belongs to a different biochemical scheme to the one we belong to, and some have called this life 2.0. So in this context, alien no longer means coming from another planet. Instead, it could be said to mean originating on Earth, but having a different common ancestor to the life we already know. As it's only in the last 10 years or so that people have started looking on Earth for this life 2.0, and if it's found, if Genesis occurred independently on the same planet more than once, again it suggests that life, given Earth-like conditions, is a certainty. So the search for life on Mars has these wide-reaching implications, not only for whether life can get going on other planets independently, but whether given Earth-like conditions, life is inevitable. If we do find life on Mars, we'll be in a better position to address some of these philosophical points. So far, though, there's no sign of life there. In my personal opinion, if we look hard enough, I think we'll find it, but I think it'll be the same life as we find here on Earth. Though that's a gut feeling, and I have no scientific basis for saying this.
This next question comes from Joshua.
How many stars are in space?
Well, the number of stars in the universe depends on the number of stars in the galaxy and the number of galaxies in the universe. Most galaxies have anywhere from 10 million to 1 trillion stars. Those numbers are a 1 followed by 7 zeros to a 1 followed by 12 zeros. The Milky Way galaxy, which is a typical spiral galaxy, has 100 billion stars, or 1 followed by 11 zeros. We can use that number as a rough estimate for the average number of stars in the galaxy. Up until recently, the current estimate for number of galaxies in the universe was also 100 billion. These estimates were based on observations like the Hubble Ultra Deep Field, which were produced by the Hubble Space Telescope staring for a very long period of time at a single region in the sky, attempting to image all of the galaxies that it could potentially see in that single region. However, even those images could miss very faint and very distant galaxies. Very recently, a group led by Christopher Consolis at the University of Nottingham performed a calculation that corrected for all of the missed galaxies and determined that the universe contains about 2 trillion galaxies. So that's a 2 followed by 12 zeros. Now, if you multiply the number of stars in a typical galaxy,
by the number of galaxies in the universe, you get 200 billion trillion stars, or the number 2, followed by 23 zeros. That's a lot of stars. However, this is very interestingly close to the same number of water molecules in a teaspoon of water, which is about 170 billion trillion.